Hello, this is Pat Lynch, and you are listening and seeing the Career Pathways podcast brought to you, as always, in our luxurious Kilt Studios. Today, we have Dr. Martha Beck, professor of philosophy at Lyon College, and it's going to be a great conversation. Before we get started, I'd like to just have other people on our team introduce themselves. Is producer Cheyenne somewhere there?
Yep, producer Cheyenne's behind the board.
Oh, and today we have a producer double thread, so we also have...
Producer Tyrese.
Oh, yes, so they're both making the magic happen, as always. So once again, just thank you so much for subscribing, listening for the first time. Please subscribe. And so let's get on with the conversation. Hello, Martha.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, man, this... We were talking about where this is kind of the legends portion of our podcast. So we're getting some, you know, some of the, you know, we had Terrell.
Oh, yeah.
And so right. Now we needed to get you. So right. We're just kind of checking the boxes.
Right.
But first thing we always start with is just a general question as far as just tell us about yourself. Who, you know, like kind of, I said you're a professor of philosophy, but can you kind of build on that and let the people who don't know you know who you are.
Okay, just in terms of credentials.
Yes.
So I started out my college career at Oberlin College, pretty prestigious place.
Mm-hmm.
I left there and went to Hamline University, which is not as prestigious, but I got a better education.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why at Lyon, people have said you can better get a better education here than at a more prestigious place.
Right.
For lots of reasons. And then I went to graduate school at Bryn Mawr and got a master's and then a PhD there.
In philosophy?
In philosophy, okay. Yep. I specialized in ancient Greek
mm-hmm.
philosophy. I had three kids.
Mm-hmm.
I did marry the boy next door at age 20.
Okay.
And I had a baby 11 months later. So I had a baby my senior year in college, which most students would not think. Took a year off, went to grad school, and had another baby. The companies selling me the birth control were lying about their product, which only people find out much later. That was one of the test cases of, yeah, anyway. So then I got my master's, finished my thesis, 3 weeks before the second one was born, and then I had a third kid and took my PhD exam 17 days before she was born. And there's a lot of, I could tell a whole different story for over an hour just about sexism and how I've had to wrestle with that. I think our culture has a lot of problems trying to juggle the real needs that children have to be cared for and the way the economic structure is,
mm-hmm.
rewards and punishes. So that's really a problem.
Yeah.
But that's another story, really.
Yeah. Well, we got plenty of time, so we might get
okay.
to it.
Okay. So I did, actually, I taught at a community college for 1 year. Then I taught at the University of St. Thomas part-time for 7 years. And then I taught... No, part-time 4 years, full-time 3 years, and then I taught at the College of St. Catherine for 5 years, and then I got the tenure-track job at Lyon, and I've taught here since 1996.
Wow. Oh, right. And you've also, like, with your time here at Lyon, you had periods where you were like a guest faculty member,
right.
You know, in other parts of the world, right?
Right, yeah. So I spent 15 summers in Greece. I had a friend who gave me a free apartment yeah. in Athens, and then I had a free place to stay in Olympia. Tough life. I think the students think I just spend my life with my head in a book, and this is not true. Then I taught for 2 summers in Prague, and then I taught in Bangladesh. I got a Fulbright to go there. in 2012. And then in 2019, I got a grant from the Indonesia government to teach there for a semester. And then I was trying to do a partial retirement, teach one semester at Lyon, one semester at in Bangladesh, Asia University for Women. Right. And so I went over there, and it was January 2020.
So you stayed for a while.
COVID hit. Yeah. No, I left. Just barely got out of there. Yeah. That's another five-minute story. But so then I taught online till the end of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lost both jobs. I had planned to have that for a while. I lost both jobs. And then I got the person we hired to take my place quit.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got offered this job again. Right. So I'm here for 2 years and then I'll go back. I want to go home to where two out of four of my grandkids are. And two of them are in 10th grade already.
Yeah.
And that's where I raised my kids in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an apartment a block and a half from my old alma mater, Hamlin.
Yeah.
So it's that's where I'm headed next. But I am trying to set up another 20-year career where I teach somewhere else one semester a year and spend half the summer in Greece. That would be my ideal. I got to aim high.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. And there's a lot of online conferences. There's a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm. So,
and as far as the in teaching, it would be Greek philosophy?
I've taught a lot of stuff, right?
Yes.
So I started out with Plato and then Aristotle. And then I really did a lot of work on the culture as a whole because I'm sitting over there in Greece, in Athens, and thinking, well, what was Plato's life like? So my idea is, what's the legacy? What wisdom did they want to pass on to posterity?
Mm-hmm.
What did they want to tell us? Because the way the profession works now is that ever since they died, somebody else had an agenda, and they either co-opted it, misinterpreted it, or they demonized it. Right. They misinterpreted it because they were anti-Greek.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to get a PhD and have status and publish in the journals, you have to toe the line of whatever's popular, even if it has nothing to do with Plato.
Right.
And so in order to get my PhD, I had to treat Plato like an analytic philosopher, which he is not, but I had to play the game.
Yeah, because that's what's popular at the moment.
You don't get status. But when I... After I got tenure, so I just had to prove I can do it the way the bigwigs do it.
Yeah.
I said, heck with that. I want to find out what he really wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to Greece, and then I connected with native Greeks who really loved my work, the people who knew the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, actually, that was what I was aiming for. But because Greece is a poor country, they still, their journals don't count as much as American journals or German journals, even though they're completely decimating.
Mm-hmm.
So I did do a lot of work on that. I have a YouTube channel with 78 videos, 10 playlists, and the theme is the legacy of ancient Greek civilization in the era of globalization. So everything is relating it back to today and what they're trying to teach.
And your YouTube channel, that you were pretty far ahead of many people because that was like 10 years ago you really kicked that off, which is real impressive. I you know, YouTube's, everybody thinks the YouTube today, but, you know, you were so far ahead of most, you know, in terms of really putting all this great content out there.
I don't think I have very many subscribers, but I just didn't worry about being popular.
Right.
I just wanted to get it said and get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I went to lots of conferences and sent abstracts. Is if I'm talking to myself as a graduate student because I couldn't find anybody who agreed with me. So I'm meeting that need. And so if somebody liked that paper,
mm-hmm.
then they go to my YouTube and they probably like pretty much everything because right. it's all connected.
Well,
so that was that.
Philosophy and its role in education today, you know, then we were talking before the camera started rolling about just liberal art, you know, the liberal arts curriculum. And, you know, it's, what's your thoughts in terms of the role, the necessity of philosophy in terms of a college curriculum right now? Because, you know, I'm coming from a career services perspective, you know, there's a, you know, I'm always focused on career paths, mm-hmm. you know, what it, that students can be successful, use this great education to fulfill whatever it is that they want. And somehow, you know, there's this prevailing thought, and I'm sure you have that perspective about where all of a sudden now, do we really need philosophy? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like we need STEM. We need all mm-hmm. these it's almost like college becomes job training mm-hmm. rather than kind of enriching the soul of developing the person, creating a citizen. So kind of incredibly long question I guess it was more a statement, but what's your viewpoint in terms of the role or the necessity of having philosophy as a core part of the curriculum for students who go to college?
Well, philosophy is the only discipline where they can't even agree on what the discipline is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I think trying to understand the legacy of ancient Greek is really important.
Right.
But I think the way most philosophers teach is optional.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it might be good. It's kind of, excuse me, a crapshoot
yeah.
about whether it's helpful or harmful or just neutral. I had a student leave here and go to take philosophy in another school, and the first day the teacher says, I'm going to beat the religion out of you. Okay?
Oh, okay. Well,
that's not helpful, you know?
Right.
Because for most students, that's their idea of the good.
Mm-hmm.
That was what motivated them to have self-control,
right.
courage. All the virtues were based on what they learned at church.
Mm-hmm.
And so character development.
Mm-hmm.
So the ancient model of liberal arts wasn't anti-religious. I mean, it was religious church. People who founded mm-hmm. these small liberal
right.
arts schools, they founded them because they wanted the best and the brightest to unify reason and faith. So it's not a blind faith. Because if you have blind faith, you can't have democracy because politicians will just take advantage of that.
Right.
Say, you know, divine right of kings or, you know, and our founders knew that. That's why
right.
they wanted to make sure either you keep your religion over here, if it's anti-humanist.
Right.
And you learn Greek humanism or you learn humanism over here. And when you are in the public realm and you're hiring or firing or selling a house or, you know, all those secular things you do, you don't discriminate based on worldview, right? Everybody's capable of the standard classical virtues. They all knew Aristotle. They all liked Aristotle. A lot of them wanted to form virtue clubs,
mm-hmm.
and they liked Confucius because they thought, well, he teaches all these virtues,
right.
but it's not connected to any religion, so people don't get orthodox. You
right.
know, they don't mix it up, and they tolerate each other, and they just learn to think about virtue. But what happened was that was a natural. And the Greeks have this spiritual humanism,
mm-hmm.
living for the sake of something greater than yourself.
Right.
Justice, truth, beauty. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is still relevant.
Right.
But it got attached to the Catholic Church, and then the Catholic Church became rich and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was all the corruption that'll happen in any religious tradition if
right.
it gets mixed up with power and money.
Mm-hmm.
what happened to Islam when oil was discovered in the Mideast.
Right.
You know, it's not the Muslim. It's not because the religion is bad.
Right.
It's because it's gotten all mixed up. So it got connected with that. Then originally, St. Thomas Aquinas united reason and faith. He mm-hmm. brought Aristotle into Christianity.
Right.
But that became very stuck in its ways. And so then when, for example, Copernicus said, actually, the earth revolves around the sun.
Sun.
And it was accepted because it was simpler. Aristotle would have changed.
Yeah.
But because the Catholic Church had co-opted it,
mm-hmm.
Aristotle got connected with anti-science,
mm-hmm.
which he's not.
Right.
But then all those associations. And so then starting in the modern period, there was a split between religion and science. Religion is just bad science and you got to throw it away. But there are a lot of movements now. People who otherwise hadn't thought of themselves as religious are talking about spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
So neuroscience, Jonathan Haidt, The Anxious Generation, is talking about social media
right.
and saying we got to get back to spirituality. A lot of people are saying that old notion of spirituality is really important.
It's like, well, it's all like I hear like that technology has kind of replaced, you know, spirituality,
religion. It never will. Yeah.
Yeah.
It won't.
Yeah.
I mean, Elon Musk might be a great engineer, but he is not. He's got issues
yeah.
emotionally and
right.
in terms of his empathy or his humanity. Or, you know, I don't think he's a student of history or literature or poetry. He
probably never took a philosophy course. Yeah, it's, but how would, if you're, you know, to a, you know, whatever major you are in college, how does philosophy help you as far as just to be a better person, better citizen?
Okay. So I always give my standard lecture about Athens.
Yeah.
And it was a democracy. And so I put on the persona of Plato. I say we had this great democratic society. We had all these institutions set up to try and teach people to care about being citizens.
Right.
So they can get beyond themselves and they can think about living together under a common body of laws. They can want to live moderately. They can want to lift everybody in the middle class. They can want people to flourish. They can want everyone to develop mm-hmm. their abilities, and that would be a goal in life, is that I would find out my calling. What is it that I naturally think about or muse about, and how does the society, you know, make use of this in a way that I can get the expertise and I can use it to promote the common good,
mm-hmm.
right? That would be your place. Now, somebody in the next 4 years is going to be a lot of disruption. So somebody might naturally have liked something, but because of disruptions, it would turn in a different direction,
mm-hmm.
right? Let me think if I can think of an example. Somebody might like math and be moving right along, and all of a sudden realizing, oh, well, Einstein is a great example,
mm-hmm.
is that he was a pacifist.
Right.
He thought, you know, he invented this new theory, but he had no idea it was going to be used to make a nuclear weapon.
Right.
Not only that, he ended up on the committee.
Right.
Right? So it's tragic. Like, he had these good intentions. He just liked math, and he was curious about this.
Yeah.
He ends up being part of this nuclear weapons program. And
which today's equivalent is AI.
That's, you know, right,
that
right?
Where, you know, there's the morality in terms of it being used in malevolent ways, which is very easy to imagine.
Well, not only that, Aristotle has his virtues.
Yes.
And he has the personal, social, political.
Mm-hmm.
Then he has the intellectual ones.
Right.
Those are the ones you learn in school.
Mm-hmm.
And he says they can be tied to any kind of moral character.
Right.
And then the characters in Greek tragedies The ones that do the most damage are the smartest ones because they can completely manipulate everybody else.
Right.
Right? And mm-hmm. then Plato's story of Athens, Alcibiades is the smartest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
He wraps the Athenians around his finger and he ends up being a traitor and helping them lose the war. I mean, this goes again. The god Apollo yeah. is the god of reason, but he is not. He's indifferent to justice.
Mm-hmm.
And he treats women like nymphs, like sex objects. And if they reject him, he takes revenge.
Right.
He's a nasty guy.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, Elon Musk has how many kids? 9? 10?
Yeah.
I don't know. But, and, you know, he's not a father figure.
Not
he
at
doesn't,
all.
No, yeah. he's totally out of touch
right.
with his emotional side. But he is worshipped.
Yes.
And he worships himself. And we're just making all the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's why I keep going. Whenever I teach the deities and I talk about their, the kids just jaw drop like,
yeah.
oh my God, how did they know? So there's certain basic primitive drives, instinctual drives, that are never going to go away. And the purpose of those ancient cultures
right.
was to assimilate those drives into culture. Create a culture where drive, like mm-hmm. aggression,
right.
gets tied to seeking the common good aggressively, right? You're competing to see who can create mm-hmm. the best polis.
Yeah.
And then sex, animus and anima, mm-hmm. you have to balance them. And when they get out of balance, okay? So, for example, if men just treat women like sex objects, right? Tarzan and Jane,
right.
something pretty primitive.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next is Helen, an aesthetic object, like just the beauty of a beautiful body.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. It's not, it's just beauty in and of
right.
itself. Then the next one is the Virgin Mary, right? She's the mother. And the trouble is in patriarchy, women tend to be great mothers, but they're not sexy.
Right.
Or if they're sexy, they're not good mothers, right?
right?
That's
yeah.
called a whore Madonna complex.
Yeah.
Either women are perfect or they're sexy.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem for men and women, right?
Yeah.
You can't really relate to each other as human beings.
Right.
So, and then the ultimate one is wisdom, that you actually can get it together. It's the same thing with women, the way they treat men. So there's just a real need to
yeah.
figure out how to get that integrated
well,
and balanced.
How does a culture like what you see in Afghanistan,
where uh-huh.
I guess women are, you know, they're prohibited from.
Oh, it's
many
terrible.
Things.
I had students from Afghanistan.
Yeah, and it's all, I may be misspeak, but are they regarded as property? You know, I know that's a very old way of thinking, but
right.
But you know, how do you find a right and wrong in a culture like that?
Well, it's wrong, right? I mean,
okay.
women are by nature equally
right.
capable.
Yes.
So any kind of patriarchy is wrong.
Okay.
Right? And so it's just the goal. That's why I think philosophy is important.
Yes.
Is that it help? You've got to get that this would be the goal, flourishing.
Right.
And so you constantly check yourself. You know, you're learning, you're teaching yourself, and you're teaching yourself what somebody's talking about when they talk about patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, that's stupid. That's a bunch of feminists. It's like,
right.
You should check it out, right?
So patriarchy is, the by design, is something to suppress women? Is that,
well, it's just that men have the advantage.
Right.
Right? The expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And then women tend to internalize, right? So right. sometimes a man might try to be equal, but the woman has internalized inferiority, or
mm-hmm.
it's just very long established. It's unconscious. It's getting a lot better. Like my
right.
daughters have not experienced anything like I did.
Right.
It matters a lot when you have children and how old you are and whether you've already had a career set up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff. And so, but you have to check it. It's not the only problem. Materialism is a terrible problem. Competing for who's the richest.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible. And we're destroying the earth.
Yeah.
Right? But the Greek stories have all that stuff built into it.
Mm-hmm.
There's the god Poseidon and the goddess Demeter. So if you mess with Poseidon, he will bring on hurricanes. He will, you won't have any fresh water. You'll have earthquakes. You won't have, you know.
So that's,
hello.
That's climate change.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you mess with Demeter, you're going to have deserts, right?
Right?
She'll be, okay, so this is what we're doing. We're mm-hmm. arrogant. We're overstepping the bounds. And the bounds can change, but there's a certain limit
right.
to how much they can change.
When you're referring to Poseidon, you know, and all the gods, mm-hmm. you know, it's like the Catholic in me.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh, false gods.
That's right.
You know,
that's
like,
right.
Yeah, and you don't see it that way. It's not.
No,
the,
actually,
yeah.
I do my work with nuns
yes.
at a monastery every summer because mm-hmm. for them, it's not there are liberal Catholics
right
who really understand
mm-hmm.
that it doesn't matter what you call it right
yeah.
But there are conservative Catholics who are anti-pagan, which is pretty ironic since mm-hmm. they got all their tradition from yeah. the Greeks
right
yeah they stole it all
yeah adapted
created a new brand.
There you go.
That.
Yes. You're talking to the marketing person.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well.
Right.
Very well. The. Well, you know, speaking of like as far as with philosophy is part of the goal is to kind of learn how to live a righteous or a just life. Is that kind of one of the kind of why going back to its central role and why we need it to remain in education is that it's going to impart to every student who comes through these things.
Okay. So in a liberal arts school,
yes,
it is associated with refining your idea of the good.
Right.
Human flourishing, the human good. In a university, most PhDs it's about analytic philosophy, which is facts. You just look at facts and draw inferences. So it's teaching logic, critical thinking,
right.
but not values, because on that model, values are prejudice and, right? So we're morally neutral.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but there's no such thing as moral neutrality, because to teach logic without any context is to teach you how to use your brain as right. an AK-47 and mow people down.
Because
right?
you do. Yeah, I remember from logic when I took logic with syllogisms. So
yes.
you could arrive at a conclusion. A mm-hmm. syllogism could easily arrive at a pretty evil conclusion.
Well, 10 reasons why you should sleep with me.
Yes. Okay. There you go. Yeah.
Clytemnestra okay. had 5 good reasons for why she should stab her husband to death.
Yeah. Yeah. All made sense.
It did. And that's why you have those tragedies
right.
where they all have reasons like, oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. That. So that's just something that you, when you have, I mean, when you, a student takes your course, what are you hoping they walk away?
Okay.
Well, that they would say, you know, 5 years, 10 years from now, mm-hmm. that this is the one thing that really resonated with me.
That's right. Well, greed is the political evil.
Okay.
Greed is a thing that destroys societies.
Right.
Because money will stick to money. The middle class will shrink.
Mm-hmm.
Homer's Iliad. Okay. Ilia was the richest city.
Mm-hmm.
And Priam thought, okay, Paris was this little spoiled brat rich kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he stole Helen.
Right.
And he brought her. And the priests said, give her back, because this is wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
The gods have spoken. And he says, oh, no, I have to coddle my nice spoiled brat rich kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it decimated the city, okay? He thought he could buy off the Achaeans. They came, and he brought a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't buy everybody off,
right.
okay?
Yeah.
People have higher values than just money.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't work.
Yeah.
So you can't just win hearts and minds with money.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then, okay, so when I started teaching 45 years ago or something, it was questioning, are we really a democracy?
Mm-hmm.
Because I went through college during the Vietnam War.
Right.
And the big issues were, I grew up with interfaith dialogue. I never thought there'd be any backward sliding on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with humanistic Christianity, which I, you know, humanistic, Hindu, Buddhist, you name it.
Right.
And then the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, my dad marched in
Selma. Faith-based, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So social justice was an imperative of being religious.
Right.
You had to treat people equally regardless of race, creed, gender, whatever. Which so my what I learned in church was the same as what I would do in society. But our founders knew there were people who learned things in church that you better not bring with you.
Right.
Right? You can't refuse to hire someone because they aren't the religious. They don't go to your church.
Right.
Right? So I grew up with the union of reason and faith. So civil rights. Then there was world hunger. So global issues. And I learned to think globally. And the environmental movement was big.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one that stuck to me because I thought these other things are going to change because they're related to human choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we can choose. Oh, well, the other one, actually, the Vietnam War, imperialism. Are we really going to try to share power? Or are we going to just try to build an empire? Be like everybody else, greedy and power hungry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the watershed because the last war we ever won was World War II.
Right.
And that was the people who were against the war in my town were the mayor of the town, the president of the college. It was a 10,000 student college, the priests, the nuns, the ministers. And then there was an anti-war rally with about 850 people. And I spoke. I was a high school student.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a standing ovation.
Yeah.
What I said was, a person will find no peace elsewhere if they don't first find it in themselves. So it's very important to me that nonviolent demonstrations stay nonviolent.
Right.
And they aren't even based on anger. It's just that this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to make the statement that this is wrong, and I'm going to testify that this is wrong. But it's peaceful, it's respectful, it's not polarizing, right? Mm-hmm. So we will see in the next 4 years, there's bound to be demonstrations. Now the key is, are they going to stay peaceful?
Let's hope. So,
I think the Empire Builders won. And we have been trying to do that, and I think we've made a lot of mistakes.
Indeed. So. One thing, going back to one thing you said, is social justice, as far as the core of social justice, how does that match up with conservative Christianity as it's seen today? I don't see that social justice has a place in how conservative Christianity is practiced.
Well, there didn't used to be all this polarization. Yeah. So there were Democrats and Republicans in my dad's church. He was a Methodist minister. Right. And for them, conservative meant conservation, for one thing.
Right.
They were totally in favor of conservation.
Yeah.
And they were isolationist.
Right.
Right? It was the Democrats that wanted to save the world for democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were... keep the government out of my religious beliefs.
Yeah.
I mean, they really had this, I have my religious beliefs, but I don't discriminate.
Right.
Right? Keep the government out of my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Who I sleep with is not the government's problem.
Almost libertarian in some way.
Don't discriminate. Yeah. It was more minimal government. It was isolationist. They were abortion, right?
Right.
That's my business. That's not the government's business.
Right.
So, you know, it's totally changed.
Yeah.
But in general, there have to be two parties. One of them focuses on the creation of wealth and one focuses on the distribution of wealth. And you can't have creation without distribution, or the rich just keep getting richer. Mm-hmm. And you can't have distribution without allowing for creation.
Right.
Right? So there should be a nice dialogue going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crashed, right? It's crashed and burned.
Yeah.
Because especially in Citizens United, when there's so much money involved in politics, right. It's the donors donate, they win. Basically, they think of a lot of the politicians are the employees of whoever the donors did. Now, not all of them. I think it's very important that students distinguish between the ones that really are trying to create a middle class and really are trying to move us toward green energy, which is the next generation's task, and then the ones that really are just puppets mm-hmm. for their donors.
Right.
Students should never say they're the same. Because if you say they're the same, the worst people will win because of people the most ugly rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's important.
Yeah. Shifting gears.
Okay.
This is your last semester.
Right.
So you were saying 45 years that...
About something like that, yeah.
Okay, that in terms, so looking back, kind of reflect, on your career, kind of share your thoughts in terms of just, what I've seen, what I've done. I'd love to hear kind of your story.
Well, I just think I failed.
Really?
Of course.
Because wait.
Everything I wanted to happen has not happened. The opposite has happened, right?
But that's not due to your lack of...
Right. No, but you're asking,
Yes.
I mean, I feel like I
failed.
Please,
I can't tell you how you feel.
Okay, so what happened was, especially since 9/11,
right.
I've been very aware that this is really bad. Mm-hmm. It's heading the wrong way, because... And I alienated myself from my kids. I drove my kids nuts because I just couldn't. I was obsessed about this, right? Mm-hmm. I was panicking all the time. And
panicking for what reason?
The country's going to go to authoritarianism.
Got it. Okay.
And it's going to go to imperialism. And we're not going to go green.
Mm-hmm.
And the environment's going to get destroyed. And racism is getting worse.
Yes.
And all this stuff.
Yeah.
And now we do have religious intolerance. Like, what the heck happened?
Right.
And so I got to beat myself up. I got to work harder. I got to do mm-hmm. this. I got to do that. But, recently I've just said that I can't do that. Like, mm-hmm. I can't live in a state of panic. I can't blame myself. I can't mm-hmm. flagellate myself. But the next thing I do, what am I going to tell my grandkids?
Yeah.
Right? And so until recently, I just thought life on Earth is going to end mm-hmm. because I've followed this. I know my students don't know, but I'm looking at what the Chinese are doing. I'm looking at green tech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we won't destroy life on Earth. It's going to be very different, but it won't all disappear.
Right.
So what I want to tell my grandkids, I want to tell my students. I have all new books my mm-hmm. last year because we're in the seventh era of globalization. Just big picture, okay? Mm-hmm. We're in the fourth industrial era,
right?
Industrial revolution. We have to go green. It's nature does not care about politics.
Mm-hmm.
If the rulers are just and they care about the ruled, they will go green. If they have some other agenda, they will not. But nature does not care. So whatever country decides they want to go green, they will be able to sell their products
mm-hmm.
and they will get rich and powerful.
Right.
And we're behind, We're living in the past. We're a classic empire clinging to the past. We're addicted to fossil fuels. We're addicted to sugar. Mm-hmm. We're whatever the capitalists want to sell us. We just buy right in.
Right.
We've been commodified. We have a culture at war with nature. And now I have students reading books on mm-hmm. this. It's not an opinion
right.
whether sugar gives you diabetes and obesity, mm-hmm. okay? It's not an opinion if social media is highly associated with making teenagers mentally ill
right.
because it's designed to go into the brainstem, close to your instincts, and trigger your fear and your fantasy. And that will destabilize you. That's their goal. Like, that's right. what they're... There's a quote from a CEO. We're competing for attention.
Right.
And in order to win this race to riches, we have to make teenagers mentally ill. And now Mark Zuckerberg is trying to get four-year-olds addicted to phones. So that's not a matter of opinion.
Right.
That's a matter of, you know, if we insist on getting rich is the ultimate goal, we're destroying ourselves.
Right.
Like, it's just the scientists say so, the social science mm-hmm. say so, and the philosophers, right?
Right.
So I do tell my students they should, college students should lead. They should know that there's going to be disruptions. Mm-hmm. So there's a technological disruption, digital disruption, geopolitical disruption, demographic disruption. People are going to move into the cities. And can't remember the fifth one. But there's going to be a lot of disruption.
Right.
But you shouldn't be surprised, and you shouldn't be afraid, and you should lead, mm-hmm. right? So I think our students, all college students, but we read some books about what the rich privileged kids do, like Mark Zuckerberg, they don't care.
Right.
And so it's going to have to be the first generation, second generation, it's going to have to be kids in small liberal arts or kids that somehow find a mentor who guides them into the green revolution in some way. And it doesn't, you don't have to be an engineer. Like, I don't really like engineering. I don't want to tell my grandkids to go into engineering.
Right, right.
It's dry, you mm-hmm. know. I like humanities. I like poetry. But all I can tell my students and I can tell my grandkids, there are lots of jobs out there where you can do good and you can do well, right? And that's what matters.
Well, let's talk that for a moment because, you know, this is the Career Pathways podcast.
Right.
And here's a philosophy major.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give a student who's interested in majoring in philosophy? What kind of career could they have?
I would not recommend a PhD in philosophy.
All right.
I don't know anybody who teaches it the way I teach it.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have tried to find it so that my students could go there.
Mm-hmm.
I have had a few students that wanted to, and I told one of them, you can beat your brains out for 10 years and end up maybe at a community college in rural Texas, yeah. right? Or, and he liked environmental stuff, you could go to the best law school in the country in environmental law and live wherever you like,
right?
Right? So he did. But, you know, maybe he would have been happier. I don't know.
Right.
But I have another one who's going to grad school, and he did. But he studied psychology, and he knows all this mechanistic, materialistic right. stuff. So when I wrote his recommendation, I said, I can't analyze his psych research,
mm-hmm.
but I can say that he would be a very good teacher at a small liberal arts college because
yeah.
I had him for these liberal arts kind mm-hmm. of classes. So so I always encourage a double major or mm-hmm. a minor in religion and philosophy
right.
because that teaches you about how you want to live. It doesn't necessarily teach you your career. Like, you could be a computer programmer and be a philosopher, right? You can
Steve
be
Jobs
a cook.
In some ways.
Right. No, he was much more thoughtful.
Yeah.
Right? And his background is amazing.
Yeah. And then you look at his approach to technology versus, you know, college dropout like Mark Zuckerberg, and who I'll show him grace that he started out rather naively and just thought that he was community building. I don't think he really envisioned it was going to be the
product. There's a book called Burn Book.
I read it.
Well,
Kara Swisher, yes.
Right, but what he said was in high school his hero was Augustus Caesar.
Caesar, yeah.
So I don't.
So maybe I'm giving him a little too much.
Well,
grace.
That's okay. You can give him some slack.
Right.
But I think he's getting worse and worse.
Oh yeah. Now he does. Well, now he was a little sensitive to criticism. Now he's just put on the Teflon.
That's right.
And he doesn't care.
I know.
There's more money to be made.
I know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of Greek tragedies about that.
Yes.
There's a lot of King Midas.
Yep.
Touch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you want to be rich? Here.
Yeah.
Everything you touch turns to gold. And his daughter came and sat on his lap.
Yeah.
And that when you want to get rich, your relationships to your family is probably poisoned.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, just the legacy of your family for generations to come.
I don't understand it. Yeah. I really
ask
don't.
Ask the Sacklers or people like
I
that.
I don't understand in terms of legacy.
Yeah.
What you want to leave behind.
Dramatic flip. Speaking of legacy, what do you think the legacy is of Dr. Martha Beck?
Well, I hate to think about it because I really don't know. Well, I don't know how people think of me.
I don't.
And I want to just go and create some sort of story as a grandma.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that when I got here, literally, this is not bragging, this is for better or worse, I have been philosophy at Lyon College.
Right.
Because before I came, 5 years before I came, before that they didn't even have a philosopher. Then they had a different one every year. And then they had me. Okay? Yeah. So literally, I invented it.
Yeah.
So that's a great job. You can literally,
right.
Whatever you want to do is mm-hmm. what philosophy is.
Right.
I really believe in liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I do hope people can understand what Plato's Academy was up to. Okay. Because he watched his democracy die. And he decided to start a school for future leaders, to warn them, you will be tempted to do this. Don't do this, because you'll lose your free society. Because we're losing free societies everywhere.
Right.
And either because they did have it and they lost it,
mm-hmm.
or these other countries were moving toward it. Right? And so I've given this lecture in China, lots of places.
Mm-hmm.
They all understand it. So we have a common humanity. We have an ability to self-regulate. We have an ability to think like a citizen and to be able to spot rhetoric. But, and I do think if you're college educated, you have a response ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think anybody is too stupid to understand when they're getting manipulated. But if you set up your society so you don't give people a decent K-12 education,
right.
and you bombard them with billions of dollars worth of propaganda,
right.
it's hard to expect them to be able, right? You put them in a situation where they're afraid and uneducated. You're just manipulating them so that you can tell them a story that they'll believe.
Yeah.
So I really don't have animosity toward, you know, working class people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people at the top
right.
that abuse their power And that's why Socrates talked to the elite, not because he was an elitist,
right?
But because they run everything and they decide. So that would be one legacy, to value liberal arts and to teach, have Lyon hang together enough so that, I mean, you get PhDs are highly specialized.
Right.
Can the faculty and the staff and the administration keep the vision alive, right, of learning how to think like a citizen, learning how to integrate the stuff, sending the students off. There's a book about evidence liberal arts needs, and it shows, you know, using social science, that students who are first, second generation, they know the difference between going to college and not going to college. Right. And they disproportionately, like 30% more higher percentage, if they majored in a liberal art, that they would be leaders in their communities, that they would keep up with reading, that they would attend cultural events, that they would really do what you need to do to maintain a free and open society. So I think Lyon, I mean, I've enjoyed teaching here, even though I didn't have the mindset of most of my students. Right. You know, a very small percentage would be somebody that I was thought, like, grew up thinking like me.
Right.
But that's all right. I don't judge students. They're here when they come, and then together. Also, I lived on campus for 7 years, so I have no illusions about my impact, and I tell them that. It's just the community as a whole, and that's what it said in that book, is that this, they don't remember exactly what subject or teacher necessarily, but they remember the community. By the time they left, they were thinking at a higher level. So that's why, to me, it's been an honor to teach here.
Right.
And it's been an honor to try and pass on what the Greeks thought. To me, it was like scary. Like, I've been entrusted with this, right? So I've been entrusted with trying to pass that on.
Right.
And I've been entrusted with trying to pass it to Lyon students. So I, you know, I can't say I was always living up to that, right? Because Independence County went more from Democrat to Republican than any other county in the whole country in 2004. So I was right in the middle of my country going in what I thought was the wrong direction. So, yeah, I wasn't always in a really good mood.
Yeah, there was a Skip Rutherford recommended an author. He's a UA professor that chronicled the whole change in the state of Arkansas from Democrat to just solid Republican, and kind of the reasons why.
I read that book, I think, from Blue to Red.
Blue Red, yes.
It just doesn't have any values in it, because that's a social
science.
It was more
the poli side that just...
Well, it was just about, the rhetoric was effective, rather than it's wrong, right?
And why was it effective? It was wrong, but why?
Yeah. But the worst thing was it miseducated people.
Yes.
It taught them to think that politics was associated with this, when really that's the worst, is the miseducation. And so, I mean, all it really is a testimony to who has the most effective rhetoric, which in this case is the most wrong. Right. Our founding fathers were not fundamentalist Christians.
Right.
They were religious heretics.
Right.
They were not loyal to their country. They declared war on their country. They were not conservative. They were radical progressives.
Right.
There's so many ways that the story got totally, totally turned around.
Yeah.
And so, but still, it was always an honor to teach here, because it's up to me not to polarize.
Right.
Right? And I know that a lot of professors have been part of the problem of polarization. And they shouldn't be. They should be part of the solution. Yeah. Right?
And I guess one of your goals would be just kind of open them up to being able to think and reason and judge on their for themselves and just not necessarily be manipulated by others.
Right. Well, there's five qualities of liberal mind, which used to be in the catalog. I don't think it is, but right. I made a poster of it. So it's intellectual honesty, mm-hmm. like admitting what you know
right.
and what you don't know. And if you don't know, find an expert.
Right.
Right? And you don't necessarily go into your algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I tell the students, very, very hard. There's a lot of good stuff out there, but there's a lot of bad stuff.
Right.
And it's really hard to get mm-hmm. good stuff from different perspectives. So I didn't really go on to YouTube videos till I was in Indonesia one time and I was kind of stuck in a room. And when I first started, I got a lot of very different kinds of stuff, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
I was learning a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then that dang machine figured out my algorithm.
Yeah.
And I can't get out of it.
Yeah.
If anybody knows how to wipe out your algorithm and start over, I would like that.
I don't think so. But I know what
really
you mean.
Hard.
My daughter, if she's on my Netflix account, all of a sudden I'm like, what? All of a sudden all these shows that they're recommending to me, and it's, yeah.
Yeah,
that's a whole other thing.
I also recommend having books. That's what I did during COVID, is read a 300-page book every weekend so I could catch up. And put them on your shelf and remember what the argument of the mm-hmm. book was.
But the five virtues, so you had five virtues.
Intellectual honesty.
Honesty is first.
Commitment to truth.
Okay.
Sexism is wrong, right? You can structure a society to be patriarchal, but it's still wrong.
But has truth been co-opted? Because now, you know, you always hear, like, this is my truth.
I know, but it was...
not the truth.
No,
it's my truth.
The liberals are the ones guilty of it.
Right, okay? Right.
It's not all socially constructed. That's why I can't label myself. And racism is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And discrimination based on some religious identity is wrong.
Right.
And destroying the environment is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All that stuff. Don't tell me that's relative. It's not. And our society is going the wrong way. And, you know, these other cultures, you can judge them as better or worse. So then the third one is fairness to opposing points of view. Okay?
All right.
And then patience with complexity and ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
That's really hard. But that's really important, right?
Oh, because everybody wants to be reductive and make it black and white, which is a simple way of addressing everything, of course, but it's not the right way, right?
It was a guaranteed no-no. I mean, it's guaranteed to be wrong.
Right.
Because you have, whatever you do, people have to buy into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that is, like, by definition wrong,
mm-hmm.
right? And then tolerance of reasoned dissent. And so people can disagree, but... And I tell the students, you know, I've had students tell me, I had one kind of recently say, she came in, what do I have to write to get an A? And I said, well, what did you like about the reading? So the students really have to figure out, they read it, they write their own comments, because I want them to come to know their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm doing is throwing stuff at you so that you come to know yourself and your mind.
Right.
You're transparent, but you're also accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's follow-up questions. You can't just think anything.
Right.
But you definitely need to know what you think and admit what you think to yourself first. Because if you have these prejudices, you need to bring them up
mm-hmm.
and, you know, look somebody in the face and say, you know you can't
right.
do that. But you should. You deserve to be examined. What was the question again?
Oh, the five. Well, we were on the five virtues.
Oh,
and so,
yeah. Okay, so I had a student. She was saying, "What do I have to write?" I said, "Well, what did you like? We did the Greeks. We did
right.
some of this and that." She said, "Well, I think what you do is of the devil."
Oh my! Well, there's something to write
and,
about.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
And you know, it's humanism. She was against humanism.
Yeah,
but. I always say, look, all I'm doing is teaching the stuff that's mm-hmm. the foundation for Lion.
Right.
right? When Lyon says we don't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, mm-hmm. race, gender, this is it. Like, here right. is the philosophy behind Lyon College, mm-hmm. whether I agree with it or not. I happen to agree with it, but I have a responsibility, even if I didn't agree with it, to teach it.
Right.
And so, okay. So I, you know, we worked out something that from the material that she could live with. And her first paper was really terrible, but I yeah. gave her a decent grade because she would have thought it was political.
Yeah.
And it's not worth it. Right. And I don't grade on the curves. So, but wow, she gave me an evaluation that was really off the wall and yeah. unfair, but
yeah.
it's okay. So I tell my students, I can tolerate that, even if it's not reasoned, mm-hmm. because I am a teacher and I sure. do have power. But, you know, the five qualities, you don't have to tolerate something that's just off the wall, because right. you can't have democracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, our students, people are going to have to figure out,
right.
how do I be fair to opposing points of view, but I don't have to tolerate completely off the wall anti-democracy things. Mm-hmm. But it's a judgment call. So that's mm-hmm. why I like Aristotle's virtues, is that everything is a judgment call.
Right.
There's no formula for moving ourselves into the next transition. There is disruption. That's, you have to understand your historical place.
Mm-hmm.
But you should keep adjusting to the changes, or we're going to get left behind. Yeah. You know?
Kind of last question. As a philosopher, what advice would you give to those listening and watching about how to manage kind of the times that we're in right now? Because it's very easy to get upset just, you know, seeing what's in a newspaper or on CNN or on your social feed. And so there's that anxiousness that, all these kind of not so positive reactions. So how do you philosophically, how do you kind of guide yourself through times and situations like this?
Well, I mean, actually, it took me a while. It's only recently that I think you just tell your students, I tell my grandkids, it's a really exciting time because we are mm-hmm. going to change.
Right.
In their lifetime. Like, the climate is going to change radically, maybe by the end of this decade, but certainly 10 mm-hmm. years from now. And people will figure out they can get rich. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a whole lot of green innovation.
Right.
And so whatever your students major in, they should connect it to sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Or they should, maybe the first job they get, they're selling somebody something they don't think they should buy, they don't need it, it's just mm-hmm. more a waste. But once you get experience, you can have more leverage and you can, you know, right. you have to do it well. So what did I want for my children when they were growing up? I wanted them to find their calling. I wanted them to find what they like to do mm-hmm. that think they can contribute. Right. So that when they end up 40 years old with a family and they absolutely mm-hmm. have to do whatever they have to do, that they're actually working in a company that has a good mission and you're working right. with good people. And all of them are in their 40s.
Yeah.
And they all are doing that.
Right.
And they had some time. This is another thing I'd recommend. In your 20s, to have those years to go and try a lot of different things
right.
until your late 20s, and then you go, okay, this is what I really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So my oldest daughter is working for a nonprofit that does environment and workers' rights. So she's been working on slave labor, workers' rights,
yeah.
international for mm-hmm. 20 years or something.
Right.
And then my son is an inner city charter school
mm-hmm.
Administrator.
Yeah.
Really hard job.
Right.
He got cancer because of the stress.
Mm.
But it's neuroendocrine cancer, and that's because we know that plastic leaches endocrine disruptors.
Right.
People are getting endocrine cancer. He got it because he was under stress. The rest of us don't get it because we're not under that much stress.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to be a chemist, go into biodegradable options to plastic, because that's going to be big, because we have microplastics.
And forever plastics that are with all, you and me, we carry however much. Yeah.
But someone's going to make money on
A
replacement for plastic, some way to get the microplastics out of the sea, you know. And my youngest daughter is in a nonprofit journal, newspaper out of Connecticut that she does economic reporting. So that she did the reporting that you can't do if you're a profit motive newspaper, right? Because
advertisers would oppose.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But, you know, they did a lot of different jobs. A student should expect that they have a lot of different jobs. But the most important thing is that disruptions are going to be there. And we will make the transition to green energy.
Right.
Some people will die. I don't know how many diebacks there will be. But there will be diebacks.
Yeah.
And then... they should just take the lead, that's all, and not be afraid. That would be. And so philosophy is that ability to give yourself a 10-year plan, a 20-year plan, a 30-year plan. Always be keeping the end in view.
Yeah.
Always be self-correcting. If you, what did you learn from what you did? What did you do right? What did you do wrong? But your goal should always be human flourishing. Right. Does that make sense?
Oh, very much.
Okay. Well, that's...
Martha, thank you.
Sure.
Oh, I've been looking forward to this. And no, really, it's been wonderful.
Well, I do want to say, now you got to hold my feet to the fire.
Yeah.
I do want to have a 20-year plan, and I do want to try to make the most.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
To... keep trying to flourish in whatever way is possible.
Oh, my. So am I becoming your accountability coach?
Well, you could be.
All right. Well,
I get discouraged sometimes, you know.
Oh, don't.
But, but I always feel like, am I doing the world any good?
Yes.
By getting, no. I mean, you're not.
Well, but you know, it's a lot of times, you know, doing good, at least my point of view, is that, you know, everyone always looks at this grand sweeping gesture that's going to change large groups of people, when doing good, it can be that one person at a time, you know, and just some that you did, you know, just you, whatever it was, whatever effort that you gave, changed that person's life for the better.
Well, that's the celebrity culture disease.
Yeah.
And that's a TV disease. We aren't on a TV. And when you look up to celebrities, they aren't the celebrity image.
Right.
They're a person.
Yeah.
And when you make yourself a brand, you're not your brand. You're a person. And so the real heroes are people like my daughter-in-law, comes from Mexico.
Right.
Makes a life for herself, has these students. I told her that because she has celebrity women.
Right. Yeah.
She's trying to tell women you can do stuff. I told her, Father, I want you to be on one of those posters.
Right.
Because you're the real hero.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to make more difference in these kids' lives than the celebrity or than their desire to be a celebrity, right?
Yeah, the,
it's just horrible. It's related to TV and virtual reality.
Yeah, it might feel good, but, you know, goodness. One of our students last semester, single mother, non-traditional student, I just had to work fast food jobs to, you know, because she was taking care of a family on her own and going to school. And just in my limited way, she ended up getting connected in and became into the management program, you know, of Waffle House. She, you know, now is on a career path, you know, we had like a significant increase in salary, and it was a life change.
No, I don't have any illusions about myself
But as you know, if you've done it. But you've done it. I'm sure you've done it, and you know, maybe you're not giving yourself credit that there's been this change, and may not even be people that have talked to you. You know that something has stuck with them, and it's kind of like mustard seed. You know that you've planted so many seeds over all the years that they're great. You know the seeds have flourished, and just you don't necessarily see it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's important because I lived on campus for 7 years when I first came. So I know I'm just a drop in the bucket, right?
Right.
And I know a lot of students stay at Lyon because of staff, not because of faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that. I just know that you don't know.
Right.
Right? But I would bet that there are more people in the staff than the faculty. Or psychology rather than me.
Right.
Or the sciences rather than me. But... You have to keep thinking about you're following your calling, right? Mm-hmm. To me, the power of ideas is really important. We still have these leftover ideas from the Enlightenment. My students still come and they imitate these ideas.
Right.
It's driving us into the ground. We have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my gift.
Yes.
And other people have different gifts. So we're all in this together.
Yes. Martha, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been wonderful.
Okay.
And so then I have to turn to the camera and say thank you, everyone, for listening to the Career Pathways podcast. We always close the show out giving our listeners, especially the new ones, where they can find the Career Pathways podcast. I don't have the answer, but I do think producer Cheyenne does.
You can find Career Pathways on 99.97% of platforms, the same amount of germs that get killed with Germex.
There we go. All right. Thank you, Cheyenne, for that very precise scientific advice. And once again, thank you so much for listening to Career Pathways podcast. And we'll come back to you next week with another podcast. Take care.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Lyon College and by Kilt Studios.